It's time for Golf DMV, highlighting golf in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and anywhere else they travel. If you love golf and like to laugh, Golf DMV is your place. This ain't your stuffy, snobby, boring golf show. It's Golf DMV.
All right, folks, it's Golf DMV. Same co-host, Claude Jennings, different microphone. Because this one's easier to use, the quality may not be as good, but
it's
I don't care.
It's not.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it's just easier to use. I don't have the microphone here in front of me, and I'm hitting the table and all that other kind of jazz. But I'll listen back to this show, as I always do. And if it's too bad, I just won't use it again. But I'm using it tonight. We got Vern in the virtual studio. We got LB here as well. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We've got Maryland National to talk about, played around there. We've got a round down in near Fredericksburg. Vern went down with the VA contingent. Lynn Lorton, right? Yeah. To play with the VA contingent. We've got that to talk about. We also have some new clubs with LB to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
We've got PGA stuff to talk about. We've got LPGA. There's just so much stuff to talk about. We've got an APGA update, of course, as well. I think what we'll do, though, we'll start with Maryland National. Then we'll talk about
Forest Green. There's really not a whole lot to say there. We can skip that for time. It was a great round. Had a good time with the Virginia guys. Course is in great shape. We'll put up pictures. Done. Keep going.
Next.
Yep.
Well, I mean, but how's Coach and Charles doing? Are they okay?
They're fine.
We played with Coach and Denise. We played my coach and wife Denise. So we'll see Charles next week, maybe at Bull Run, but. He was good. Glenn came out. Glenn did pretty okay. I didn't do well. Sucked off the tee box. I told you guys. You know what I do well because I want to talk about it. So I'm just going to trash.
Okay. So let's go to Maryland National. Vern, because he's such a great guy and he is the tee time.
De facto.
He booked the round for us at Maryland National, even though he wasn't playing, for Saturday morning. I love being right back at the early morning tee times because, you know, you're done by 11:15. Or so. We had a tee time at 7:30. We get up there and I'm just, you know, so there's two things about the round. Number one, I played like trash. I mean, it was really, really bad. I mean, I'm topping balls.
I wasn't even there.
It was bad. it was bad. I literally threw, at some point in the round thought about not even keeping score anymore. Like, this is just, it was that bad. Shot in the hundreds, but we'll leave it at that. No hundreds, kind of low hundreds, but mid hundreds. So anyway, it was horrible. But the course itself, spectacular.
Yeah, beautiful.
Now here's the thing: as someone who hasn't played any golf on the other side of the Bay Bridge, and a buddy of mine was saying that there's some really nice courses down in Southern Maryland that we should try as well. But out of all the courses we've played, this is probably, I think it's the top course in Maryland. It's, I mean, from the conditions to the layout to some of the challenging holes to having to play shots. And what's interesting is, too, like, I mean, when I say I played bad, but I had good shots. It's just that I mean, this may sound elementary, but I had way more bad shots than I had good shots. Like, there was nothing neutral about my game. There was nothing okay about it. It was either a really good shot or it was a horrible shot. You know what I mean? There was nothing neutral about it. There was nothing like, okay, I'll take that. I never did I say, yeah, you know what, I'll take that. No. It was either, oh, wow, great shot, Claude, or it was, dude, what's going on? Like, you know what I mean?
And then your problem was the good shots was followed by a bad shot.
Yeah, the good shots were followed by multiple bad shots.
Right. So, yeah.
But I had a good time. And it's funny because Aaron and I were talking about this because, you know, sometimes we'll rate courses based on how we do. Mm-hmm. I was having a horrible time, but I never played at a better golf course. Maryland mm-hmm. National is a must play.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was, and it's funny because I think Vern or Glenn on the text, you guys either asked what would you compare it to?
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I mean, maybe, because of the landscape, probably like maybe a Musket or a Worthington or PB Dial, but like on steroids.
Really?
When we talk about best course in Maryland that we've played, you know, if we go down the list, for the most part, people will say Bully Rock probably over Maryland National. I have no clue why. No clue why.
Okay.
Yeah. Maryland National, I mean, Bully Rock doesn't stand you know,
it can't hold his, it can't carry his jock.
Sometimes you'll say one and then 1A. There's no 1A.
It's a clear separation.
Yeah. It's one, and then it's an entirely different tier, and that one and that one is two. LB, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree 100%. The views, the greens, the fairways. It's an Arthur Hills design as well. A lot of tilting fairways, which will make you pay.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe speaking of with the Arthur Hills and the tilted fairways, maybe it's a good comparison if there was like it's a longer Waverly. Longer Waverly with more challenges
and better views.
Yeah.
Better conditions. I was really surprised at the condition of the course. I just wasn't. Not that I expected anything bad, but it was surprisingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, just manicured everywhere. There was no dead spots. You know what I mean? You know how you go club courses, everything is nice, but you get to one hole, you know, half of the fairway is kind of chewed up or the tee box or whatever. None of that. It was a beautiful course. It was a beautiful day. The staff was great. You know, I talked to the guys when I went in to check in. They were, you know, happy to see me, glad to take my money, you know. Mm-hmm. Raise balls were included in it with the $100. It was $100, $105 bucks, whatever, but the range balls were included. They had nice driving range, nice putting green as well, short game area. Mm-hmm. Everything you want in a golf course, they had it. GPS on the carts, which also had the you know, the actual pin location and distances and all that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I the only thing I can say about it was the little buggy with the gnats, but they can't control that. So, you know, it was weird, but there's no cicadas. You know, they got cicadas. Gnats, but they didn't have no cicadas. I don't know how that happened.
Where were we the week before? And I'm sitting here knocking cicadas at the wood. I'm sitting there, a couple of them knocking cicadas.
Right, they're flying into you.
And again, the course can't. The course
they can't control that. Cicadas. Right, it's a 17-year event. So
I mean, Maryland National, like,
it was
beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Just nothing bad to say about it.
And a great hot dog and homemade potato chips that were really good.
Had a good ham BLT. I mean, it was just, we walk in there, and again, the staff, just you know, there's a little baby shower going on around the corner there in the little restaurant room, and the ladies behind the bar, they're laughing and talking, and, you know. One said a joke that was kind of, what did she say? Yeah. Somehow it came into murder or something.
Yeah, we were talking about animals, and I don't know how we got on the animals and stuff, but we talked about murdering animals, but we'll leave
she
it at that.
She said something about killing. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, we'll leave it. We won't go any further.
She recognized how fast it got out of hand. She's like, you know what? This doesn't represent who I am. I'm not like a serial killer. Because if anyone loves, you know, like scary movies and they watch Halloween, they know Michael Myers started by killing cats. And so anyone who starts talking about killing animals, you need to watch.
Be aware.
Nothing bad to say about it. LB and I both agree that it's probably a 2 to 3 time a season course. Now.
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go out there just so I can do the sports radio thing of intentionally zagging. Maryland National. Not that great. Like people do on LeBron or other people.
Right.
Good.
Yeah. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful course. It really is.
I can't wait to go. Because
One thing I was thinking was, like, in this moment while I'm here and I'm looking at some of the views, and again, I'm playing the worst that I've played in years. Right. I'm thinking to myself, what other course would I rather be playing right now than this one? Couldn't think of one. Yeah. What beats this or anything about this? And I couldn't think of one. Now, again, I'm just saying we haven't played on the other side of the Bay Bridge. And according to a friend of mine, Bobby Wehausen, he says, you got to come down to Southern Maryland. There's some really good courses they have down there, too. Shout out to Bobby. And so, yeah. Oh, and, you know, shout out to Jerry Boston and Aaron came out to play.
Came out and played. Yep.
I think they had a good time. Aaron didn't share his score. He was quick to share my score, but he didn't share his. You know, Aaron, when you listen to this, just shoot me a text of your score. I'm sure he shot in the 80s because that's what Aaron does.
Normally does, yep.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just, but he wasn't quick to share. He nope. told me what mine was before he left, but didn't tell me what his was. Hopefully we get to hear from Aaron. So yeah, shout out to Jerry Boston. Always good to play with him. One of the original listeners of Golf DMV.
Exactly.
And Aaron. And by the way, we play with listeners. And so if you ever want to play with Golf DMV, just shoot us an email. Just go to the website, golfdmv.com, and then go to contact us. Let us know when you want to play. We'll invite you out. And if you're weird, we won't invite you out again.
It's interesting too, though, how Aaron and Jerry had started as listeners. You know, random guys we invite out to play with us, and now they're part of our crew now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
They've elevated from just listeners to actually part of our circle. So
yeah, and yeah, you too can become a part of this
circle. That's right. There's hope for you as well.
Absolutely. And we talked about this before we left. I mean, it's really good just to kind of be around people that's fun to play with. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'll be honest, like, I really appreciate my golf crew. You know what I mean? Like this whole team here with Vern and LB and Aaron and, you know, Coach, you know, and Ward and Howard and
Glenn,
you know, Rusty and Glenn. I appreciate the whole crew because they're just fun to be around. You know what I mean? And stuff like that. So, we're good guys to be around. Now, if you aren't fun to be around, that's on you, and we won't invite you out again. But we'll play with anybody. So anyway, So here's the thing. I left Maryland National totally frustrated with my game. Love the course. Not quite frustrated where I want to give up golf. Just like, maybe I shouldn't play right now. I should just go to Golf Tech with my guy, John Ross. Immediately before I even left the parking lot, I emailed him. I asked him two questions. Number one, hey, has the new driver and the putter come in yet? Or when is it supposed to come in? Right. And two, I got to get lessons in. And so he told me that the new driver and putter should be on June 8th. I think at the recording right now on the 7th.
Tomorrow.
So they should be in tomorrow. Mm-hmm. They should be in tomorrow. But more importantly, I need to get in with lessons. And so he reminded me that, you know, when you sign up for these Golf Tech lessons, you have a client portal. And so I logged into my client portal, which I totally forgot about. And there they are, like, six lessons we've done before, all the video and the analysis and practice suggestions. I was so distraught, and I told LB this, by my round at Maryland National. I spent most of the night going back to lesson number one and watching it over and over and over again. And I'm like, I'm not even going to take another lesson from John Ross until I master the things from these first six, or at least remember these things, because something went wrong. Something went terribly wrong. And yeah, so I'm like, I was mesmerized by this. And I said, you know what? I logged into that portal. And I mean, it's late at night. I mean, it's after midnight. And Sierra's asleep in the bed. And she's turned towards the whole other wall. And it's this bright light from my phone. And I got the AirPods in because I don't want to disrupt her sleep. Right. And I'm just watching the video. And it's done. Replay. And I'm going back. And it's like, okay, well, how are my shoulders? Well, was I going inside to out? I'm sure I was coming out to in. Yeah. I was probably, you know what I mean? And I'm doing all this analysis. Yeah. And that's where I am right now. I'm at the point right now where it's like, you know, I feel like I'm at square one. I'm at square one.
Yeah, it's funny that John Ross basically pushed you towards, hey, man, we don't need to do any more lessons. Have you seen this portal where we recorded all of your stuff from before?
I told you all this stuff already.
Yeah, that's the first thing I'm thinking about. And then, like, we've tossed this around off air, but I really have to do this skit because it just makes me – I think a lot of golfers could relate where – I have an idea where basically an instructor for some golfer who's not good, like the golfer comes in there. Yeah, or me.
Basically, John Ross and me is what we're trying to do.
It could be me too. I don't have an instructor right now where basically the golfer walks in and it's just like, you know, he's doing his regular lesson and the guy's like, all right, let's go ahead and work on your shoulders. And then casually he's like, yeah, you know, I got a trip coming up to Bandon. And the instructor is like, Bandon what? Bandon what? Bandon dudes. Are you going out to hike and you know, see the sunset?
Take some pictures.
Go play golf. Do you paid money? You know what? Clear my calendar. You need seven more, like the package we have, we need seven more of these. The calendar.
Right.
You need about to go out there and tell people I'm your instructor.
Right, and embarrass me. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Or in our case, Pinehurst, which is what we got coming up. But yeah, I think that's probably, we do navigate away too quickly from the stuff that we were learning.
100%.
And then when you're reminded, you're like, oh, and did you see yourself when you're watching the video? Did you see yourself do the things he said in the video? And we're like, damn, I'm looking at a different version of myself.
Oh, no, 100%. So, so the one thing that I noticed was the fact that it's a weird thing with my alignment where he says I always open, like in my stance, my default is usually with my hips closed. mm-hmm. and my shoulders open. Okay. And he's like, you need to close your shoulders, even if you don't remember to open the hips, because you'll do that when you in my downswing when you start. Right. He said you'll do that. You got to remember to close your hips. In my stupid head, I had it backwards. Where I thought that I needed to open my shoulders, and so that would explain why when I thought I fixed the drive, because that hamster greens, the drive's going straight, we're doing good, falls road, we're laughing at Crouppen because I'm out driving him, and because I remember it was close your shoulders. For some reason in my mind, I kept adjusting to open my hips open my shoulders, and that's why things were slicing, and that's why I was topping the ball. And it's like, that's not what he said. Like, how did opening it even come into your mind? And I'm sitting in the bed. I'm just like, yes. And so, but I had to fight the urge, two things, to go to lesson number two. It's like, no. You're going to keep watching this. Right. Because it was also, you know, I wasn't coming around the body and keeping the hands back, you know, and I wasn't doing any of that stuff. The club, it was two things that
it
I was doing.
Mess, that, is what it was
two things that I recognized. Yeah, it was a mess. Two things I recognized right off the break. And it was like, but I also wanted to fight in my mind to go to lesson two, but I wanted to fight not to think that, okay, now that I remember it's close the shoulders, everything's good, go back to sleep. No. Right. You played trash. You're going to be up until 2 o'clock and you're going to watch this video four times.
Right.
And you're going
golf this punishment.
You're not sleeping tonight. You're grounded. You're going to go up and you're going to watch these videos.
There's no other sport. This is if you did this with anything else, you'd be insane. Could you imagine your local rec hoop game, basketball game, where you record the game? Mm-hmm. You're like, what's Jerry doing? Jerry's up late at night looking at himself shoot J's.
Never.
Right.
You would never do that. Only golf. That's why. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Mm-hmm. And I've been part of rec leagues. Where, you know, the 30 and under leagues, 25 and under leagues, go one night, you know, you lighten it up, everything's good, and two games in a row, shooting like trash, and never once have I even thought about it after the game. Like, oh, man, I play like trash tonight. Ha, 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 time to go home. You know what I mean? Like, that's the conversation. Like, that's what it is. I play like trash, it's all good, you know. Yeah. But then with golf, it's like, what is wrong with me? You know, and you just, it's the end of the world. But anyway, that's my whole struggle, and it will – I'll come out of it, you know, but even like golf, this is what it seems like. It seems like when things are going great, you feel like things will never regress and they will never get bad. But then when things are bad, you feel like they may never get good again. Yeah. Like in my mind, I'm literally thinking, what if I never break 100? Like it's crazy because I've been in the 80s. There were a couple of rounds this year. Because remember, we were even joking about it. Because we were talking about Glenn and he coming for Claude. And I was like, well, I'm the only person this year who haven't shot in the 90s. And here I am making jokes about it. And now, one round at Maryland National, I shot 106. And I'm like, what's going to happen if I never – like break,
never get back.
That literally came across my mind.
That's why.
I was like, shoot, Glenn's going to beat me in 2 weeks. No, so that just came. But anyway, LB, you've got a whole, your clubs came in. Let's talk about my clubs coming in.
I'll make this pretty quick. So so they arrived on Saturday. So after we left Maryland National, I went straight. I went from past Frederick to downtown DC to get my clubs. Mm-hmm. And so
on a mission too, by the way.
Oh yeah. I was gonna get them clubs, whether come hell or high water. Cause I had called him that day and he answered the phone and I told Claude, I was like, I'm going down there. Somebody gonna tell me something.
Watch him make the last four clubs.
If I gotta stand over him, he's gonna make my clubs today. So I had already passed down 270 past my house.
Yeah,
you know, I'm almost down to the beltway, and I say, "Well, let me call one more time, just because." So I did call. He answered, and he said, "Yep, got him. I'll be here." I'm like, "Okay, cool." So here's one thing that did happen was kind of interesting to me. So when I get to his office, you all probably have not been there, but you go through a door off the main street, you go through a little hallway, and it's just a hallway. At the end of the hallway is the elevator. So there's one way in, one way out. The only place you can go is to the elevator. So I hit that LA button. I'm waiting for the elevator to come down. While I'm doing it, another guy walks into this vestibule. And so he's standing there. So the elevator drops. And, I get in. He gets in. So all I said to him was, I said, so how long have you been waiting for your clubs? Exactly what I said to this guy.
Oh, no.
And he says, well, he told me four, but I'm on eight. And I said, well, yeah, he told me three, I'm on five. And I left it at that. And then this guy said the same thing that I told y'all, I think 2 weeks ago.
Right.
He said he needed to just hire somebody and have somebody coming in and just put the grips on some of that mundane stuff so he can have more time to do some of his other things and people don't have to wait so long. I'm like, exactly. That's my point exactly. So
I agree. Hold on. Can I jump here real quick? I'll be listener this is a golf doctor we're talking about in DC. Great fitter.
Great guy.
Great fitter, and you would recommend him to anybody. You're just going to have – but he's the only guy, and you're going to have to deal with these delays.
Yeah.
The analogy, when LB texted us angrily this weekend, I got to wait. This is some BS, blah, blah, blah. I went through the same thing. I was like, man, I'm going to have to drive down there, whatever. But when you get them, you forget all about that. This is basically the restaurant or the soul food spot in the middle of somewhere where it's just like, look, I'm going to have to go here. I'm going to deal with attitude. There's going to be a wait. There's going to be a line around. Or it doesn't have to be a soul food spot. It could be a cupcake place, whatever. I'm gonna stand in line. This sucks. Then you get the product, and you're like, "Yeah, this is exactly. Worth it. I have to take one star off. It's gonna be three stars, not four. But them three stars make up for the one.
No doubt. The product is great. Yeah. His analysis was outstanding. Yeah. Everything in his process is on point, except the actual delivery of the clubs into your hand. And all of it is not his fault. I mean, again, some of it is not his fault. You know, there are delays because everybody's playing golf now. You know, all the manufacturers are swamped and behind, and I get all that. But once the stuff arrives, I need that stuff turned around quicker. That's my only problem with him. And other than that, he's fine. So I'm going to leave him alone at that.
Yeah.
The other part of this, so I did this morning, I did get up at 6 a.m., which I don't normally do unless I'm playing golf because I don't do it for work. And I made it up to Blue Mat. I mean, not to Blue Mat. So I went to Laytonville this morning.
Yeah.
First guy there, got me a bucket, and I took the clubs out. It's going to take me a minute to figure out these distances.
Okay.
Because my wedge, like my old/burn set, Tyler set, I knew my 100-yard club was my wedge. 100 yards. I could 3/4 it to 75. I could 1/2 to 50. You know, I knew how to hit that club for my 100 yards and in.
Gotcha.
My new wedge now goes like 125. It's gonna take a minute to get that to get my distances down, and that's where I'm gonna start there. I hit all the clubs, and they all went further than my old clubs. But it's gonna take me a minute to get my. Say again.
I was asking Claude if he remember when we started this whole fitting process.
I do.
Yeah, well, they do. They all go further. You know, I used to hit a 7-iron 150. Now I'm hitting an 8-iron 150. It is what it is.
Yeah.
For me, the biggest part, because for me, at least in my opinion, nobody else might agree with this. To me, the strongest part of my game was 100 yards and in. It was around the green with my wedges.
The short game was great. Yeah.
So that's going to take. I need to get back to that to understand my distance and you know how to hit those clubs to get my distance right. Their graphite shafts are much lighter. They feel really good. I'm happy with them so far, and tomorrow I'll be back at the range in the 6 a.m. in the morning.
Nice. Like a candy store, like how it was when you first started the game. Like, I got to get to the range,
Got to get it dialed in, because we playing this weekend. I can come out there and look like trash. I'm trying not to.
Right.
So that's that for that.
All right, well, there you go. Let's jump to the professionals, to the pros, the folks who know what they're doing out there. We'll start with the PGA. Interestingly enough, I mean, the main story is the guy who was in the lead after three rounds and couldn't close the deal because of the positive COVID test with Jon Rahm. I mean, first of all, I don't think the tour should have did it right after the round. They're right there on the course as soon as he finished putting. They should have just waited until after he turned in the scorecard. You know what I mean? And
at least not in public view.
Right, you know what I mean? Unless they were trying to like say, hey, don't go into a scorecard thing. We don't want you around too many people because you've tested. So maybe that's what it was.
Then you could have done that on the low, like got him.
So, and Jon Rahm looked like he was about to just straight up take it. I mean, he was running away with it. He didn't, and we know, you know, golf is a round by round sport, but there was no indication that he would have.
Ask Lexi Thompson.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. But I mean, it's like, there was no indication that he wasn't going to win it. I believe so. Here's what's funny. one of my wife's friends had a birthday dinner, and I watched everything up until the final hole. And once that was done, because the playoff, I had to go to, you know, to this thing. And so I didn't see the playoff, but I hear that Patrick Cantlay won.
Yes. Yes, he did.
Was the playoff exciting at all? Or like what? Yes. You know, I didn't watch it at all.
Yeah. I think so, because I mean, I was locked in. I was into it. I was actually rooting for Morikawa, not because I have anything against Cantlay, but just because I was like, oh, you know for reasons we'll leave out that I had an exchange, but I was rooting for Colin Morikawa. And off the, it was exciting to me because the thing I like on the playoff hole is the mind game. I wish I could be like on the tee box with them as the caddy when it's two golfers and, you know, Colin stripes one dead center in the fairway.
Right.
Play right. Cause then you Morikawa, you swagging. Like, but true to golf, that's not the whole game, because then Colin ends up in the bottom.
Right, in the rough. So yes. I need to ask a question here.
Okay.
Because I was watching that and the US Open at the same time.
Same time, me too.
So I was going back and forth. So when Cantlay hit his right.
Great right.
And, and Morikawa did the, it's out of, you know, he did the sign. Oh, it's out. It's out. And I knew he was in the fairway. When I turned back, he was in the rough. I'm like, how the hell are you getting in the rough? He was in the middle of the fairway. You're supposed to be in the green putting.
Yes.
So did he just shank it? Or I don't understand what happened.
So I have no idea, because I was doing the same as you. I was slipping back and forth. I was watching Lexi putt. And the same thing will be, I kind of expected to cut back to them on the green. Like, on the green and maybe Cantlay chipping to try to get up.
Exactly. No, so
I don't know how he got there, but this is what we talked. And what surprised me, you know, Morikawa, strong iron game. He's a second shot dude. Like, he's an approach. That's his game. But Cantlay said, I ain't worried about your, you know, nice tee shot, cuz.
Right.
On the green and made the longer putt.
Exactly.
Made the longer putt. Exactly. And Morikawa's face when he missed the, I was like, I know that feeling.
Yes.
Incensed. Like, you're incensed, as if like, no, I did that correctly.
Right.
Give me the tournament. I won. Right. I was closer. Cantlay's right. Nah, cuz. Strokes game approach on the green. So congratulations to Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah. $1.6 million for that.
Yeah.
And Colin missing that putt with $1 million. I mean, not
that was a $1 million putt, essentially.
It was a $600,000 putt.
Ooh,
that he
missed. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And then I mean, that COVID result was a $1.6 million,
positive for John Rahm.
John Rahm. You know what I mean? Like,
now I gotta understand too, those guys. I mean, I understand you can be vaccinated and still catch it. But I am assuming he's vaccinated. I would think he would be vaccinated.
I think, I can't confirm this, because I saw on IG a bunch of reaction posts were like, oh, this is the best, blah, blah, blah. And I saw a lot of, and he's vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I initially, my reaction, I just thought it was unfortunate. I don't disagree with people's visceral reaction of like, this is BS, but that wasn't mine. I was just kind of like, oh, here we go. This sucks. And the reason I think I feel that way is because this is in line with the PGA. The PGA, if their thing is, if there's a rule, no matter
how stupid it is, we're going to follow it to the T.
If somebody on TV sees you touch a tree on the backswing and it has nothing on the effective swing, we call it out. We got to enforce it. So the fact that they – weirdly, I don't want to say I feel good. I don't feel good about it. But weirdly, I'm like, they stick to that. Even if it's John Rahm, a big name and a big time competition, Jack's competition, they stuck to the guns. It was like, nope, this is what it is. So they're consistent.
They're consistent
at least, because it does seem like that's a place where they could have, like the NBA, any other league is just like, you know, LeBron had a thing. He went to a party. It was some COVID. They was like,
right. You good, man.
We're going to have you in the playoffs. Not the PGA. LeBron, you're suspended. That's it.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, you know, how many people does he necessarily have to come in close interaction with to play outside of his caddy? And by the way, his caddy's been with him this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been the closest one with him. I mean, you could have him, you know, tee off by himself in the final group. You could have him go out in the morning when no one else is playing and he plays. He posts whatever his number is, and if that's the number to beat, that's the number to beat. You know what I mean? There's different ways to go about it.
To solve that.
But, you know.
With them, the rule is the rule. No matter how stupid it is.
Let's go to the Manny Millions here with the PGA.
Okay. Well, just a couple quick things about before we leave that. Because they were more important than Manny Millions.
Other thing that was important was the whole Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau thing is still going on. Did you guys see The Brooks Koepka Michelob Ultra thing.
I'm reposting that the video from. It's wild. Like for those who are listening, if we have new listeners, you haven't seen, go to IG. There's gonna be a repost of a video we did, I think in 2019. That is about Brooks and Bryson beefing. That's still relevant today.
Right,
yes. I did see the Michelob Ultra thing, and I want to say, like, I was talking to Glenn about this, and he made a good point that, like, the Bryson camp, you know, when they start throwing fans out and stuff for yelling Brooksy, that is lame.
They acted on. They acted like, and so I saw so many golf posts about, you know, when Brooks is doing too much, him and Michelob Ultra shouldn't do this in the face. It's like, whoa. If Bryson had thicker skin and they weren't like throwing people out when they say Brooksy when he hits the ball, Brooks and Michelob Ultra wouldn't have done anything. There would have been no need to respond to anything.
Yeah.
And by the way, at what point do we mark or score the level of immaturity that is not necessary? Like once we reach immaturity, line? Like. Mm-hmm. Why not go all the way? Because both of them are, you know, acting ridiculous. But, like, if we're already past the point, why stop now? Let them both act like children.
Let me piggyback on that, Claude. You know what? They're not even being ridiculous. This is golf fans or maybe golf purists being too particular, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trey Young, we got guys getting spit on in other leagues, getting called everything out there about their mama.
Yeah.
So if we go to golf, and I understand that golf isn't those sports, it's a gentleman's game, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so if we go to golf and the worst thing they're doing is saying another golfer's name, that's the top. Get out of here. This is good for golf. We got Brooks. People are interested. No, we're not throwing fans out. Like the line, Claude would be like saying things that are untoward. Like you want to, you know,
talk about people's mama and stuff like that.
If you want to say, you know, colorful language, but that's the most a benign taunt that you could have at a golf.
Right.
Like, oh, you know, you're not as good as Brooks. Oh, get him out of here. Throw him out.
Right. Could you imagine if like at an NBA game the way you can boo if someone's doing a free throw? If people can boo on your tee shot, the amount of booze that would be there for Patrick Reed, even for Bryson, it would be crazy. And then throw someone out because after he hits and say Brooksy, shot, Brooksy.
Right.
Stop calling me Brooksy. Like, it's like, honestly, get out of here with that. Yeah, but that's why Bryson is who Bryson is because no one else would probably do that outside of Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, nobody would.
Yeah. So back to my notes. Quickly, your boy Tricky Ricky, you know, found his game.
He's playing better.
Rounds.
he finished now.
Yep. Tied for 11 at -4, 225,000.
There we go.
And the other thing,
change, by the way, for Ricky Fowler. That 225 chump change. Yeah.
That's not all the commercials. Right.
Everybody in the Jennings family is very excited, except Sierra, my wife, because that's her son's favorite golfer. She roots against him. I don't know.
All right. So I'm a little concerned about JT. That's Justin Thomas.
He's been struggling.
Yeah, he has. I looked up his numbers today. And since the players that he won back in March, he's gone T42, T21, T13 was his highest, T26, missed the cut at the PGA, T40, and T42. So he's trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the deal is, but I hope he can get it back because I do like watching JT play. He's a pretty good player.
Wasn't his grandfather who passed away recently?
It's been a minute.
I'm not worried about him.
I think he'll come back. He'll come back. But there's another thing interesting about this. There was quite a few withdrawals, and I don't know, J.B. Holmes, Bubba Watson, Cameron Champ, and Matt Kuchar all withdrew from the tournament somewhere in the first and before the second round was completed. Because Bubba, I think he got to the ninth hole of the second round he withdrew. So, but I haven't found anything as to if they're injured or they just were like, well, I ain't gonna make the cuts. So I'm going home early or what, you know? But it was this is an odd number of people that withdrew. You normally don't see that many that withdraw from a tournament. And yeah, I'm sure you all saw the Phil riding around with his trophy. Yes. All this nonsense. Yeah. I didn't make the cut today, but I'll drink some wine out of my cup. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, he was driving around the golf cart with him. Yep, just driving around this cart. Just a quick reminder that I won the PGA Championship. Yeah. And that was the whole video. It's like, yep,
yeah,
that's
Phil. Yeah. So we'll do Manny Meeks.
By the way, LB, you weren't like this 2 or 3 years ago. Like,
oh no, he was insufferable. I couldn't stand his ass.
And now he's your guy.
He's cool. He's cool. I mean, I will say this: he always was my short game guy, even when I didn't like him as a person. That was a golfer. Right. He was my short game idol, no doubt, no doubt about it. Even the club that the golf doctor fitted me with, my wedge, Phil Mickelson designed that joint.
The high toe.
Yes, sir. So I'm going to be killing y'all around the greens.
Look at that. Look at that.
All right. Many Millions. Harry Higgs. Ever heard of him? Should have.
Oh, yeah. Arizona State.
He finished plus 17. He won $19,437 in the Memorial Tournament. He's 6'2", 235 pounds. He's 29 years old, a graduate of Southern Methodist University. He did sports management was his major Southern Methodist.
Yeah.
He went pro in 2014. He did the Corn Ferry Tour and the Latin America Tour, and he had one win on each, and that's how he made it. I think after he won it on the Corn Ferry, that's how he got his card. For the PGA. So he joined the PGA in 2019. So he's pretty new to the tour.
Okay.
His best finish so far, he was fourth at the PGA. Didn't have no idea. No idea.
PGA Championship?
Yeah. Kiwa, the other day. Yeah, like 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah, he finished fourth. I had no idea.
No clue. Yeah.
None. Exactly.
He was in it? I didn't know he was in
it. Right. Exactly. I never heard his name. I don't remember seeing his name on the leaderboard, but somehow it says he finished fourth. I didn't go back and verify that, but that's what it said on the internet. And the internet's always right.
That's right.
So here we go. So it's not a lot to this because the PGA website really is sucking ass. So I had to get this from other places.
Okay.
He has four top 10
events. That's great analysis of the PGA.
It is.
I mean,
what do you think about the PGA website? It's really sucking ass right now.
Like,
okay.
There we go. So he has four top 10s.
Okay.
Out of 46 events. I don't know if he played in all 46 or he made cuts in some. I'm going to give you all data I have. What is his career earnings? And again, it's only been 2 years, but he came in fourth place.
Okay.
At the PGA. So that's a good look. That's probably
four top tens.
Yeah, four top tens. And one of those top tens was at the PGA, which I'll keep my estimation what I think was probably worth to myself since y'all are guessing. Mm-hmm. I won't tell you that part. But so what do you think his career earnings is?
So I won last time, so I'll go first. I'm not gonna do the sucker move late. So I'll go first. Undercut him. But only four top tens in that one. So I'm gonna in 2019, I'll put his career earnings at 4.2.
Okay. That's
probably gonna go 2.8.
Yeah, that's probably the right answer.
The actual number is 2.806.
No, I was right on the number.
We both won because I said my answer and I said it was too high, so I pretty much guessed
it. Yeah, so you guessed it too, right?
Wait, we both won.
You both won. Yeah, you both won. You both get a participation ribbon.
Nice. I like those participation ribbons. Participation ribbons make me feel important. I like them. Anything interesting about this guy?
No.
To the LPGA?
No.
All right, cool.
Okay. All right, Aaron. LPGA, U.S. Women's Open. I watched a good bit of it. I'm pretty sure most of us did. Interested to hear back from Glenn because I think this was the first kind of LPGA tournament he kind of dove into. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you too, Vern. So look, interested in your thoughts on it. Number one, the Olympic course, a beast of a course. Beast of a course, man. And I just enjoyed watching them play the course itself. Shout out to the young lady, school. It's cool little tweet Saturday night where, like, I guess he was like a math teacher, a science teacher, something. Somebody tweeted her, one of her teachers said, "Hey, don't worry about that project. We'll just go ahead and you're exempt from having to focus on what you got to do tomorrow." So that was kind of cool. She had a great attitude, all smiles. I mean, just this youthful exuberance, you know what I mean? And just carefree. There was one time on Saturday, maybe it was a Sunday, where she made a bogey putt, a long bogey putt, and everyone's screaming and cheering. She does the whole Hulk Hogan ear thing where she wants to hit a crowd more. She was awesome.
She really enjoyed herself, you know what I mean? That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She enjoyed. Now, apparently, she, I guess it was 2 years ago, she also played and did okay in the U.S. women's open as well. This wasn't her first time around. She said last time, she was like, I could barely even mark my ball because my hand was shaking so much. I was nervous. She said this time I felt a little, you know, a little more comfortable. And maybe it was Glenn who pointed this out on the group text. It does seem like almost like tennis, like some of the women on tour peak at a very young age. Even when you look back from Brooke Henderson, Lydia Ko, you know, I'm looking at how young these ladies are from 28, 27. And you're like, it seems like they've been on tour for almost 20 years. A lot of them start when they're 16 and 17. And so then by the time they're 26, 27, we've been seeing them for the last 10 years.
Like 10 years,
yeah. Right, right. But they've peaked already, you know, or at least it seems as, you know, as if they did. Lydia Ko's had great years years ago. Same with Brooke Henderson and stuff like that. And so, I don't know. But yeah, the biggest takeaway for me was, I mean, we'll talk about Lexi and her choke, you know, on the final day. But the big thing to me was just this whole love and appreciation for the Olympic Club. That course is crazy. But Vern, so you watched, you know, dug in deep a little bit more than usual on the LPGA Tour this, you know, tournament. Your thoughts?
I thought it was dope. I should have been watching it sooner. Like you, even on the last podcast, you talked about, you know, give it a couple of tournaments and you get into it. I was into it right away. Because I watch women's tennis too. And the one thing you can say, if you want to be that person, like, oh, well, you know, they don't hit it's serve and volley. They don't hit it hard, which is not really true when you watch Serena and something like Pliskova and some of these other ladies play because they're crushing it now. But the it doesn't, even with, you know, I don't know, even with women's tennis being where it's at, it doesn't take away the enjoyment of watching them compete and, you know, the sets and growing up breaks. And this is two people going against each other. Golf, to me, for women's golf, has the advantage of, I mean, there's no backdrop to compare it to where it's like for or WNBA, people want to go at that, like, oh, they don't dunk. There's no backdrop. They hit the, I mean, I guess maybe they're a little bit steadier, but when someone hits a ball on TV, like JT, sure, he hits it, you know, 3-10, and then, you know, Mega, you know, what? How do you pronounce her name? Yeah. She, the young 17-year-old lady will hit her ball, you know, 290 or Lexi Thompson is hitting 300-yard drives. I don't see a playable difference when I'm watching it. I'm not like, this is anticlimactic. It's still chipping. It's still putting.
All the same stuff that PGA does.
Same stuff. So to me, I was able to lock in immediately because the competition was the same. There's no comparative nature for me between that and golf. Because ultimately what you're doing is you're playing the Olympic Club and you're playing the course. And it was great that I feel good that on my first, you know, of course I was watching a major, my first tournament, like really diving into the women's golf, we got a little playoff hole at the end and got some good action and a nice finish from Yuka Saso.
Sasso,
who won $1 million for that win. So Mega is a hyper. I'm just gone. I'm gonna call her Cutie Pie, 17-year-old. She that's my name for her.
Okay,
ride the line a little bit. Nice young lady.
She's still lady, Cutie Pie. I don't care what y'all say. She finished T14. She would have won $96,000, but she's an amateur, so she gets zero. Which is some bullshit. Patty T, that's my latest heartthrob. She's finished T26 plus 8. And Daniel Kang finished at plus 10 at T35. I enjoy the tournament as well. I do enjoy watching them play. I find some of their swings to be more interesting than the guys. Because the guys, I can see them. I can see the effort that they're putting into a lot of them, trying to hit it hard and trying to hit it far. The women seem to be so effortlessly, and they hit it just as far. To me is fascinating. It really is, especially MB Park. It looked like she's in slow motion. She's swinging so smooth, but that ball is gone.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to mimic somebody's swing, that might be the one to try. Yeah, I enjoyed the tournament too. Like I said earlier, I was going back and forth between that and the PGA and a little bit of basketball until that became a blowout. I missed some stuff here and there, but I enjoyed the tournament. Well, I watched it pretty much every day, every chance I got to watch.
Shout out to the Philippines. Yeah. You got your first champion in golf. Really quickly on Lexi Claude, I don't know what I'm doing here, taking a range. Yeah. But I just want to say, I'm not, because you're going to talk, you know, I know you're going to get into like, oh, did she choke, whatever. I try not to be that guy with any other sport, you know, because I've never played at a high level. Right. And watching on TV, couch pressure, guy being like, oh, I think the pressure got to him. As an example, Morikawa and Cantley. I don't think Morikawa choked. I think he just missed the
This was missed the putt. Yeah.
But there are times. There are times in all sports when you can, when you, as at least me, as the couch amateur, can clearly see something's not right here. And it wasn't when Lexi missed the putt to the one that we all, you know, the, I guess to, for her to stay in the match.
Right. All it was before that. Yeah.
It was the hole before that. It was one for her. Just, I think
she barely touched it. It like went like 2 feet.
Yeah. That's the one when I, and it wasn't the putt. It was all the stuff before I saw her set up and she was moving and she looked, it's hard for me to describe, but when I'm sitting,
She looked uncomfortable. Yes. Over
I,
the putt.
I said, I know that look. I told Keish before she hit it. I was like, oh, if she missed this, this is done. She's out. And she missed it. I was like, yeah, she's shook. She's 1000% shook.
Yeah, explains
why she left the one to stay in the playoff. You know, 2 feet short.
Which
she didn't know. I had explained to her. I was like, pros don't do that. She may miss wildly high or long. Short is
this
like,
going to get there, right?
I don't know what's going on the green, and I'm scared, and I'm nervous. That's what I saw. Right. So I discounted her.
Yeah.
A lot of people I listened to afterwards were saying that, you know, putting has always been her Achilles heel, apparently. That's always been her weakest part of her game.
Yep.
But to your point, Vern, there's one thing about being a weak putter. There's another thing when you're hitting the ball 2 feet short of the hole or you're whiffing on the ball and that kind of stuff that she was doing, because that's not a mechanical thing. You know what I mean? That's in your head. Right. That's a head issue, not a not a physical issue.
Right.
Because anytime you watch any of these like playing lessons with the pros or you watch any of their YouTube stuff, they always talk about how the last thing you want to do on the green is leave a putt short.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is somewhat even the opposite of what some of the amateurs like us think. Like, I don't want to get it up as close as I can to within the circle and then knock it in the next time. They don't want to leave it short because a putt that don't make it can't get in.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so they want to knock it as and so they'll miss it and just hit a comeback. And for her to do that, it was obviously not, like you said, not skilled or anything other than just in her head. She was nervous and scared about it.
Right. Yeah. Now, I think it compounded. So where I couldn't see it, but where you could start to see it compound were LB, where the Dan Clark, if you guys were watching, the shots before. Because it was coming up on nut crunch time, she started missing greens.
Yeah,
and so this is when in your head, I feel like walking up to the ball. Now you're in a bunker. Now you're short for the chip. Mm-hmm. Now you know if you know that putting is the weakest part of your game.
Right.
Now you know that like the only thing that's going to save me
is this chip.
My putting, and then that's where you can start to get rattled. So I feel like if she makes those greens in regulation, we probably don't see that. She's probably like, cool, like you said, Claude, I could just nestle. I'm in the lead. I can just nestle it up, 2 putt, get this par, or even say to get this birdie, and I'm up out of here. But then once you realize that, like, everything rides on your ability to putt, I mean, it was bad. It was atrocious.
It was almost sad to see, really. I mean,
Almost. Congratulations, Yuka Sasso. I like saying her last name, Sasso. Reminds me of Carlito's Way for anybody. It's a deep cut for anybody who knows my guy from Carlito's Way. Big guy.
So, LB, before we get out of here, you got any APGA stuff you want to share?
Yeah.
We are the official podcast out of the D.C. metro region of the APGA. Although they didn't make us that, but I'm just
thinking. They make us feel that way. The players did.
The players did. The organization itself got some work to do.
Well, it's running now. Okay. So we want to shout out, Vern, you may be helping with his name. His last name is Dillard. I think his first name is Mulby.
Mulby Dillard, yeah.
Yeah, Mulby Dillard from Florida A&M. Mm-hmm. He did get a sponsor's exemption to the Rex Hospital Open in the Corn Ferry Tour.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, unfortunately, he did not make the cut. I think he finished – I think he went plus +9. The cut was at
2021.
He's pretty young. He's doing well.
Yeah.
He made it there. So that's half the battle.
Right.
I just want to follow up on. So when we were out there, we saw them at Valhalla the next week, which was last week. They were at the TPC of Louisiana. That's the word I'm looking for. The home of the Zurich Open. And that's where they played last week. And Mr. Marcus Byrd won at minus -11. And this guy did get to see he finished in second place. I saw him at Valhalla. Rafa, his last name is Lori. He's from Pompano Beach, Florida. He finished at minus -10. And Roddy and I did get to watch him play a little bit. He's definitely pretty good, obviously, by his score at minus -10. He's pretty good golfer. Third place was Willie Mack. And just so you all know, I hadn't found this till now, their purses are $25,000 for the tournament. So I actually have a printout now of who actually, how their breakout is, how the money gets divvied up. So first place was $8,000. Second was $4,000. Third was $2,500. And it goes down from there. My guy, J.P. Thornton from Houston, who he did an interview with us that we will be posting here.
We'll post it. Yep.
He finished at 12th place at minus two. He won $700. The bottom of the payouts is $250. Looks like it's around 15 places, so he gets about $250. Is the cutoff, and after that, everybody else is you get dust. Kamau Johnson at this particular event finished at T23 at plus two. Mm-hmm. Another guy we saw play out of Valhalla, Tiger Hubbard. He finished at T40th at plus 13. And my guy, the local guy,
Trey
Craig from Richmond, he withdrew. So I don't know. Wow. Again, I don't have information on why he withdrew, if he's injured or what happened. But I hope it was nothing serious, and he'll be back at the next event, which will be July 19th and 20th. They'll be at in Chicago or Silvis, Illinois. I'm not sure where that is in relation to Chicago. But at the TPC Deer Run course. Okay. So that's what I have on the APGA for this week.
Okay.
There's going to be an update on – oh, I'm sorry, Claude. I was going to just say the Pinehurst Surprise is an update. The way you score is going to be revolutionized. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say.
The way we score is going to be revolutionized.
Going to be revolutionized. Okay. Keep your ears
okay.
Out. Okay. Better tease the last time when I was asleep when I just said something's going to happen.
Will be revolutionized.
It's going to be a surprise.
Okay. All
right. So I was reading up this one other thing because it kind of ties into what we were talking about as far as like if you're a golfer who has been on tour, maybe one, but now you're struggling to keep your card, you got to qualify for tournaments now. Mm-hmm. A couple of names that have to qualify for the U.S. Open, they're going to all do it in near Columbus. Number one, Ricky Fowler. He's going to stay in Columbus. They were at Muirfield for the memorial. Okay. He's going to do that. But also Keegan Bradley. They're going to join him in Columbus. Jason Duffner, Charles Schwartzel, Patrick Harrington.
Doesn't Jason Duffner have no majors? Yeah. These are major winners. Yeah,
exactly. Aaron Baddeley, Charlie Hoffman, Roy Sabatini, David Lingmuth, and Ches Reavie. And so it's like, if I am someone who's from Grove City, just outside of Columbus, and I think I got a chance to make this qualifier, and then I look at, wow, Charles Schwartzel's playing it? Wait, Ricky Fowler? Wait, Duff? You're thinking, how am I going to make it, number one? But then also, it's like, but also, if you're Duff or you're Ricky, what happens
when you don't?
If you don't qualify in these, it's like, whoa, so.
Yeah, local club pro Vernon Brown. tell
beat
that story forever.
Beat him in the qualifier.
Yeah, but Duff's going to be like, cool, what'd you do when you got to the U.S. Open? I withdrew in the first round. Yeah. 26.
Yeah, right. plus 22.
They just asked me to leave.
Yeah, I didn't withdraw. They literally just asked me to leave.
Yeah,
right, it's time for you to stop. Yeah, let's just stop with it. I think that's all we got tonight, gentlemen. Is there anything else we didn't touch tonight?
I'm good.
No, that's it. I think
there you go. Golf DMV folks, we'll be back at some point next week, and I'll listen to this show. Maybe I'll use the better mic. Maybe I'll continue.
Yeah, you will. You use the better mic.
Dang, it was really this bad, man. Yeah.
It's noticeable.
Compared to your normal,
okay. Compared to how Vernon and I sound, you sound bad.
Wow. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be back on the other one next week. All right, folks. Talk to you later.